Sarva Shastra Dipiusha Sarva Vedaika Satpala Sarva Siddhartharatnadya Savalokaika Dvikpavada Sarva Bhagavata Prada Srimad Bhagavata Prabho Kalidvanto Ditaditya Sri Krishna Parivartita Paramananda Pataya Prema Varshakshadayate Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Sri Krishnaya Namostume Madhika Bandho Matsangin Madguru Madmahadana Madnistadaka Madbhagya Madananda Namostute Asadu Sadu Tadayin Adini Cho Chatakara Anamuncha Kadachin Mam Premnarit Kantayok Spura Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Sutta Uvacha Krishna Evam Bhagavati Mano Vang Drishti Vritti Bihi Atmanyatmanam Aveshya Sontak Shwasa Uparamat Sutta Uvacha Krishna Evam Bhagavati Mano Vang Drishti Vritti Bihi Atmanyatmanam Aveshya Sontak Shwasa Uparamat Sutak Uvacha Sutta Goswami said, Krishna, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Evam, only Bhagavati, unto him, Manaha, with mind, Vak, speech, Drishti, sight, Vrittibhihi, activities, Atmani, unto the Supersoul. Atmanam, the living being, Avishya, having merged in, Saha, he, Antakshvasaha, inhaling, Uparamat, became silent. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sutta Goswami said, thus Bhishmadeva merged himself in the Supersoul, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. With his mind, speech, sight, and actions, and thus he became silent, and his breathing stopped. Purport. The stage attained by Bhishmadeva while quitting his material body is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Because he merged his self into thinking of the Lord and his mind into remembering his different activities, he chanted the glories of the Lord, and by his sight he began to see the Lord personally present before him. And thus all his activities became concentrated upon the Lord without deviation. This is the highest stage of perfection. And it is possible for everyone to attain this stage by practice of devotional service. The devotional service of the Lord consists of 9 principles of service activities, and they are 1. Hearing, 2. Chanting, 3. Remembering, 4. Serving the lotus feet, 5. Worshipping, 6. Praying, 7. Executing the orders, 8. Fraternizing, and 9. Fully surrendering. Any one of them or all of them are equally competent to award the desired result, but they require to be practiced persistently under the guidance of an expert devotee of the Lord. The first item, hearing, is the most important item of all. And therefore, hearing of the Bhagavad Gita, and later on, Srimad Bhagavatam, is essential for the serious candidate who wants to attain the stage of Bhishma Deva at the end. The unique situation at Bhishma Deva's time of death can be attained even though Lord Krishna may not be personally present. His words of the Bhagavad Gita or those of the Srimad Bhagavatam are identical with the Lord. They are sound incarnations of the Lord, and one can fully utilize them to be entitled to attain the stage of Sri Bhishma Deva, who was one of the 8 Vasus. Every man or animal must die at a certain stage of life. But one who dies like Bhishma Deva attains perfection, and one who dies forced by the laws of nature dies like an animal. This is the difference between a man and an animal. The human form of life is especially meant for dying like Bhishma Deva. So even though Bhishma Deva's example is impossible for anyone else to imitate, he had strength that no one else had. He was blessed not to leave his body until he wanted to. But the blessing didn't include that there would be no pain at the time of death. And he, in order to take advantage of that blessing and leave his body at the auspicious moment when the sun crossed over into the northern hemisphere, not only should the sun be in the northern hemisphere, but the moment of the... This is Makara Sankranti. When the sun moves into the north is the most auspicious for leaving one's body. So he was able, by the blessing that he received from his father, to choose that moment of his death. But in order to take advantage of that blessing, he had to suffer lying on that bed of arrows. He was pierced with numerous arrows, and he was lying for weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, in that position. It's described that it was extremely painful. And he tolerated it. And hardly anyone else, even so-called great Kshatriyas, could tolerate such pain with it and maintain an equal or a well-composed mind to be able to think about the Supreme at the moment of his death, and even to speak elegant poetry in such a condition. So that can't be imitated. But still, Prabhupada is talking of Bhishma Deva as a practical example. And he says everyone, it's possible for everyone to attain this stage. It's not possible for everyone to be shot through by 50 arrows and to lie, pierced by those arrows for 2 weeks. Without maintain good consciousness. It's not possible for everyone to do that. But the actual perfection is that at the moment of death, Bhishma Deva was fully Krishna conscious. In fact, Krishna was standing right in front, and he was watching, looking at Krishna at the moment of death. That any person, Prabhupada is telling us, any person can achieve that perfection. To think of Krishna at the time of death. And what we should do to make that likely to happen, it's up to Krishna whether we'll be able to do that at the time of death. It's Krishna's mercy only that will allow us to think of him at the time of death. But we can do certain things to make it likely that Krishna will want to give that mercy. We can practice remembering Krishna now by the 9 processes of devotional service. Prabhupada very carefully named this organization according to its purpose, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Our purpose is the achievement of consciousness of Krishna, being aware of Krishna, thinking about Krishna. This is the purpose. It is the one thing that's needed most in this modern world. There are so many conveniences, so much technology, medical science, ability to facilities for transportation and so on are available to people. Food is moved all over the world to make it possible for people to eat very nicely. But what is missing in the modern world is any awareness of Krishna, any thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or there's not much of it. Just like even a poor country has some assets, but they're monopolized by a few people. Even the poorest countries in the world, like Haiti and some of the countries in Africa, have rich people in them who take the largest percentage of whatever small resources are available for themselves. So similarly, even in the modern world, there's some God consciousness, but it's a great scarcity. Only a few people are God conscious, and they're not even sharing it with others. That's the greatest miserliness, that in a world that's dying, starving, for lack of God consciousness, you have some and you don't want to share it. It's like being a rich person in a poor country. It's actually not very honorable to keep all the wealth for yourself and let other people starve. So devotees who don't want to share the mercy they've gotten are in that position. Anyway, by practicing these activities, 9 primary activities of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is for those who are not perfect, who would like to become Krishna conscious, but have material disqualifications. By practicing sadhana bhakti, you can free yourself of your disqualifications and gradually gain this asset of Krishna consciousness that is the one thing that the world is missing, the one thing that the modern world doesn't have. You can obtain it by Shravanam, Kirtanam, and the other practices of sadhana bhakti. And Bhishmadeva is a great example. He's practically doing all 9 at these last moments of his life. He's certainly chanting nice prayers. And when you chant, you're automatically hearing also. Unless there's something wrong, if you're deaf, or it's practically impossible not to hear unless you're actually, your brain cannot hear at all. Even if your external ears are not working, the bones will carry the sound to your brain. Even if your ears are stopped, how can you not hear when you yourself are talking? You may have expensive earphones that shut out all the outside noise, but when you make a sound, you'll hear it from inside. So anyone who chants automatically hears. That is the argument given why chanting is the most important process. That is the opinion of Sanatana Goswami. It is the most potent and the most important of the nine processes. But it has to be preceded by hearing. You cannot repeat what you haven't heard first. But once you start chanting, then the hearing goes on automatic pilot. You're automatically hearing by chanting. So no one was talking to Bhishma Dev. Krishna was just sitting there silently. Yudhishthira had asked a few questions, but mostly Bhishma Dev did all the talking. And now at the last minutes of his life, he's praying and no one else is saying anything. So he's chanting, and all he's hearing is what he himself is saying. But that's also devotional shravanam. We know from what he says in his prayers, these 11 verses of his prayers, that he's remembering various things about Krishna that he himself experienced. We can remember Krishna in terms of his relationships with other devotees, especially if we are not well-developed devotees and we don't have much of a personal relationship with Krishna. Then we have to just try to remember Krishna's activities in relationship with other devotees. But Bhishma Dev had plenty of experience, direct association with Krishna. So these are the things he's remembering. What Krishna did on the battlefield, sitting on Arjuna's chariot, the dealings that he himself had with Krishna during the battle. Then in the end, he also remembered the gopis in their ecstasy of separation from Krishna during the time of the Rasa dance, and the kings and sages glorifying Krishna at the Rajasuya sacrifice of Yudhishthira. These things, all involving Krishna, his loving dealings with his devotees, these are what the things that Bhishma Dev remembered in his last moments. And of course, he's giving everything. He's showing his friendship to Krishna and giving the last thing he has. He's no longer able to get up and fight. So he cannot offer his normal service to the Lord. All he can do is offer his breath. He can speak a few words, and then his breath will leave his body, and that is his final offering. But that's the perfection of devotional service. We're young now. We can do so many things. Those should be our offerings to Krishna, to use our capacities, our youthful strength and our abilities. And when we get sick, when we get old, offer whatever left we have. We may be poor, we may be sick, we may be on the verge of death. And if all you can do is breathe your last breath, then offer that at Krishna's lotus feet. That's the perfection of life. We shouldn't be attached to having facilities and assets. What we have to do is become Krishna conscious. There's no price on that. We don't need to accumulate any certain amount of money or have any particular intelligence quotient or any particular strength or talent. We just have to be fully focused in our mind on Krishna and his service and his devotees with however much or however little we have as our assets to offer to him. So therefore, Prabhupada saying everybody can achieve the same perfection of Bhishma Dev if they follow this 9-step process. Okay, Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Madan Mohan had his hand about 1 second earlier. So. Yes. There's a lot of... Yeah, can you get the mic?
Hare Krishna. Just wanted to ask you, Prabhuji, the comment on that word of Krishna. He uses Madgata Prana in 10.9. Looks like Bhishmadev here is like showing an example of how, as you said, he couldn't do any normal service, but he offered his breath. Is it the same as Madgata Prana, or Krishna means something else by that?
I think usually that prana means life. So it's a poetic way of meaning that you give your whole life, everything you have. If you have something else, it's probably not enough just to sit and breathe for Krishna. I'm too lazy to get up and do anything. I'll just breathe for Krishna. That's not adequate. But it means to give, that Krishna is the Lord of your life, prananata. It's to be taken figuratively. When you have nothing left but your last breath, then that's your final offering. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yes, Bhargava Prabhu.
Can I say something about this breath also? Can I ask something about this breath also?
You can ask.
Like when we are listening about Krishna, then we see that there is some change in the breath also. When we are listening about Krishna, or when we are thinking about Krishna, or when we are contemplating about serving Krishna, then even the way we breathe will be in such a way that we won't be aware of the breath. But when a person is engaged selfishly, then the breath is so heavy and rebellious and so horrible, dirty.
Yes.
Like in that verse, it comes, Tair darshaniya vayavair udara vilasa hasekshita vamasuktair hrdatman hrdapranamsha. So when they are absorbed in seeing Krishna, then since they are not specially conscious of their breathing, so can that be considered that the breath is offered to Krishna?
Yes, but it's not a voluntary offering usually. In the permutations of different ecstasies that are exhibited or experienced in prema, a lot of them involve, they're internal, they're matters of consciousness, but they have their external symptoms or external, they create external reactions. They're changes of consciousness, these different ecstasies, but they affect, they show themselves in the body, and the medium of the transference of the ecstasy from the soul to the body is the prana. By different, Rupa Goswami describes how the prana affects the different energies in the body to make different symptoms. But it's very complex. You'd have to be a complete expert in the science of rasa in order to analyze, person is breathing like this, it means that. It's not... Ordinary medical science can't trace these ecstasies. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he found Lord Chaitanya lying faint or maybe even dead in front of Lord Jagannath, he measured his breath with a little piece of cotton and saw that he was still breathing. And from that he could tell not only that he was alive, he could have felt the pulse for that, but he told that this is a symptom of a particular kind of ecstasy. That this is not an ordinary person. He's not suffering some medical condition. This is a transcendental ecstasy. So by measuring, Sarvabhauma was expert enough just by to measure with a piece of cotton how Lord Chaitanya was breathing to tell that he was in a kind of ecstasy.
You said that Sudha Goswami says somewhere that chanting is the most important process.
Sutta? I mentioned...
Or Shukadeva Goswami. Sanatana Goswami.
I mentioned Sanatana Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In his... There's discussion in the fourth chapter of the second part. No, the second chapter, involving Pipalata Rishi and others. And Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary on those verses, gives his own opinions. There's discussion which process is more important. There's arguments back and forth. But Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary... He gives his opinion that it's kirtan that's most important.
And because that happens to be, because it's accompanied by hearing, still the predominance for hearing stays, isn't it? Because chanting becomes a becomes the best process because there is hearing, and additionally there is chanting also. So because it has two things.
Well, there are different opinions. Some devotees think that chanting is the most important. I mean, the hearing is the most important. Some say that chanting is the most important. Hearing is for your good. Chanting is for the good of others. It's for Krishna's pleasure. When we sing songs about Krishna, it's for Krishna's pleasure. It's supposed to be. That's why I wonder sometimes. We're always, you know, publishing Hare Krishna mantra, rock style and rap style and this style, modern styles, to attract people. But when do we ever think about how can we sing in such a way that it pleases Radha Krishna? You know, the kirtan is supposed to be for their pleasure, not just for attracting a public. Okay. Madan Mohan,
I remember Bhakti Vikasha Maharaj saying that, quoting Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, saying that Shravana is the Swarupa Lakshana of Kirtana. That's what he said. It looks like it's his opinion. So,
Okay, it had to be explained to me what it exactly means.
He went on to explain that it is the Swarupa Lakshana. Unless we
that would mean that hearing is chanting.
Yeah, I mean somebody else's maybe. Unless we hear what we chant, as you said.
Yeah.
Unless we're completely deaf or dysfunctional, then we should probably concentrate on what we chant for Krishna by hearing it very attentively.
Yes.
Ourselves. Yes. Otherwise, it's not going to be our own good. Not just a deaf person who chants Hare Krishna may get the benefit of preaching, but he may not get the benefit of hearing the holy name which he chants.
Yeah. If the mind is inattentive, then there's not much hearing. You know, there's hearing but not listening.
It's emphasized that, Prabhupada, I think he emphasized many times when we chant Hare Krishna, the first thing we have to do, besides clearly pronouncing the words, we have
is to hear.
We have to hear, yeah. Otherwise, yeah. We don't get any benefit from it.
Yeah. That means that hearing is part of, I'm sorry, hearing is part of chanting. There's no proper chanting without hearing. Go ahead.
Karthi, just a question about what you just mentioned, the pastime of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Just a question about the pastime of Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because I was just reading it in the break, so it was... I just want to ask, why would he actually be an expert on rasa? Yeah, or a logician.
Well, he wasn't just a logician. He was an expert in Vedanta and apparently other subjects also. He knew theoretically about rasas. Even mundane poets, they have their own presentation of ecstasies, but those are mundane ecstasies. I don't know, you know, we don't have the, you know, university records of Sarvabhauma, what subjects he actually studied, but he must have studied Rasa Shastra also.
I have a question regarding Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and another one regarding Bhishma Dev. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, I heard that he was a devotee also. When I asked this question to Madhavananda, the same question that he had to Madhavananda Prabhu,
yes.
He said, if I'm not misquoting him, he said that Chaitanya Bhagavat almost describes him like a devotee. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya.
Chaitanya Bhagavat describes
him almost like a devotee, the way it describes him is like a description of a devotee.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he's an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah.
And most of the original associates of Lord Chaitanya went through this phase of apparently being some kind of materialists.
Yeah, but that was part of the pastime that he would
It was part of the pastime, but not only for Sarvabhauma, but for most of the associates of Lord Chaitanya. One by one, they recovered their Krishna consciousness and recognized Lord Chaitanya. But they were living with him in Navadvip, in their earlier years, not recognizing him, and acting like non-devotees. Most of them. Murari Gupta and others, other very close associates of Lord Chaitanya.
But to know the science of rasa, that happened within the pastime of him still being an impersonalist.
Well, he was some of the impersonalists have got some interest in devotional service. You can be a Mayavadi and still think that devotional service is nice, or Krishna consciousness is nice. It's a stepping stone toward impersonal liberation. The especially the followers of Shankaracharya, they don't reject Krishna consciousness, but they co-opt it. They use it for their own purposes. They relativize it. So there are two kinds of ekadandis, two kinds of followers of Shankaracharya, the smartas and the Bhagavats. The Bhagavats are basically some kind of Vaishnav, pseudo-Vaishnavs, let's say. They're externally practicing some kind of devotion to Krishna or to some incarnation of Vishnu, but they're actually Mayavadis, and therefore what they're actually feeling in their hearts is not proper devotion. They're Mayavadis. That means they're opponents of Krishna. But they're acting like devotees or pretending to be devotees. But in the course of pretending to be a devotee, you pick up the devotional knowledge. So Sarvabhauma, as a Mayavadi who was pretending to be a Vaishnava, learned all the tricks of the trade of the Vaishnavism. He learned the Bhakti Shastra, the Rasa Shastra. So he's actually an eternal associate of the Lord, but in his early pastime, he's acting like a, pretending to be a Mayavadi who's pretending to be a devotee. But he's actually underneath a devotee.
Because you had some devotion to, like Jagannath, it seemed, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya being...
Yeah, but many Mayavadis hang around these places. There's crowds of Mayavadis in Vrindavan and in Puri. Shankaracharya established one of his mutts there in Puri, one of his principal mutts.
I have another question.
And they're not against the worship of the Lord. They use it for their own purposes.
It's not quite related to the subject, but since we're speaking about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's no description of Lord Chaitanya showing his Sadvuja form to
Sarvabhauma.
To Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya.
Yes.
So where does he show his Sadvuja form? I understood it was to him. Or
there
was
is
it
no description?
No, not in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
It's in Chaitanya Bhagavad, isn't it?
So it seems like there are different descriptions. Because he says he shows the Narayan form and then he shows his two-arm form of Krishna.
Is that correct?
Chaitanya Charitamrita says he shows his Narayan form, then his two-hand form. Or he shows either one before or one after. But he shows these two forms, that's all. Krishna form and Narayan form, not Sadbuj. Chaitanya Charitamrita says that.
Don't we have a picture in Chaitanya? No. Okay, there's a famous painting on the wall there in the Gambira.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? It's not... That Leela is not described in Chaitanya Bhagavat?
I don't know.
I don't remember. Anybody remember? Okay, I can't answer the question because I don't remember the facts.
In the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also there's a Sadbuja form.
Yeah. I don't remember any facts that would explain where that tradition is coming from.
Okay. Why did the other question thing? Bhishma Dev, why did he stay for 2 weeks exactly? Is it this whole period was just to explain the teachings?
Two things, to have enough time to explain enough Dharma Shastra to fill up 360 chapters of the Mahabharata.
So that lasted 2 weeks, the discussion? No.
Well, I don't know. No, because he had been lying there already for maybe 2 weeks when Yudhishthira came. I don't know how long he spent, a few days speaking. He was waiting, second thing, he was waiting for the Makara Sankranti, for the moment when the sun passed to the north. And it was just the arrangement of Krishna's Leela that Bhishmadev would be lying there for so long. It's just to glorify him. Okay, anything else? Okay, thanks. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.